I'm Veronica Dudo tonight on EWTN News Nightly. Second state visit. President Trump is in the UK meeting with King Charles III. We have all the pageantry and protests. Plenty of interest in the Fed. The central bank is set to make a major announcement what it could mean for the U.S. economy. Hitting the weights, Pope Leo has a message about trusting in God's timing. Plus, all the right notes on the feast of St. Hildegard of Bingen. Learn about her many accomplishments and how she remains relevant today. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the feast of St. Hildegard von Bingen and St. Robert Bellarmine. Our top story tonight, President Donald Trump receives a royal welcome during his historic second state visit to the United Kingdom. The day of pomp and circumstance underlines a deeper purpose, showing the strength of the U.S. and British alliance. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Veronica, good evening to you. President Trump calls it one of the highest honors of his life and taking part in the welcoming ceremony, 1,300 members of the British military, 120 horses, of course, plenty of pageantry, but not everyone rolling out the red carpet.
President Donald Trump and First Lady Melania Trump land at Windsor Castle in England for a formal state visit. First, greeted by Prince William and Princess Kate, then by King Charles and Queen Camilla. Video shows President Trump riding in the same horse-drawn carriage with King Charles during an extensive procession through the Windsor estate as part of the ceremonial welcome. President Trump saluted as British troops played the American national anthem. The president then inspected the honor guard with King Charles before watching the guard hold a parade and procession. After the welcome ceremony, the First Family and the Royal Family toured a collection of artifacts about U.S.-British relations laid out in Windsor Castle's ornate green drawing room. The President and First Lady then made their way to St. George's Chapel, where organ and choir music filled the room. The pageantry continued outside with a beating retreat musical performance performed for the first time at a U.K. state visit, and featuring the U.S. Army Old Guard Fife and Drum Corps. Followed by a show in the sky, the Royal Air Force Red Arrows zoomed overhead, leaving trails of red, white, and blue smoke over Windsor Castle, all leading up to a lavish white tie banquet with speeches by King Charles and President Trump at the glittering event.
So in renewing our bond tonight, we do so with unshakable trust in our friendship and in our shared commitment to independence and liberty.
On behalf of all Americans, I offer a toast to one of the great friendships, to two great countries, and to His Majesty King Charles III, a very, very special man and also a very, very special queen. Thank you very much.
Earlier, protesters sent a message by projecting images of President Trump and Jeffrey Epstein on a tower at Windsor Castle. That resulted in 4 arrests.
Now, tomorrow, President Trump holds talks with Prime Minister Keir Starmer. On the agenda, a new UK-US technology agreement. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Pope Leo makes another appeal for peace in the Middle East as the situation worsens in Gaza. Israeli troops and tanks are pushing deeper into Gaza City as more people flee the devastated area. Phone and internet services are cut off following the strikes. This makes it more difficult for Palestinians to call an ambulance during Israel's new offensive. According to the Gaza Ministry of Health, the Palestinian death toll in the Israel-Hamas war tops 65,000. The Israeli military says it has struck 150 targets. In 48 hours and aims to take full control of the city. The Federal Reserve cuts a key interest rate by a quarter point and signals two more cuts by the end of the year. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell announced the cuts, the first since December of last year. Lower interest rates could reduce borrowing costs for mortgages, car loans, and business loans, in turn boosting growth and hiring. Wall Street responded well to the news. The Dow ended up more than 250 points. Joining us to discuss further is Todd Stankiewicz, co-portfolio manager of the Free Markets ETF. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So the Fed just lowered its benchmark rate by a quarter point and signaled two more cuts this year. What message do you think this sends about the central bank's outlook on the economy, especially the weakening labor market?
Yeah, I think that this came as expected. Everyone was expecting pretty much a 25 basis point rate cut today and two more for the balance of the year. And the Fed gave them exactly what they were looking for. One of the things that was a little different was the more hawkish tone for next year, where a lot of people were factoring in another three rate cuts next year, and they're now just talking about one rate cut next year. So I think there's two messages going on. First off, that they're providing insurance cuts, which is what Powell basically directly said today. And they are saying, though, that the economy may not be as weak, or they don't have to go and have this the beginning of a larger rate cutting cycle, is really what the message that we're seeing from Powell. I just don't know if it's going to lower all the borrowing costs the way people expect it to, because back in September of 2024, when they cut, Treasury yields actually went higher. And when you look at mortgage rates, they're benchmarked off of Treasury yields. But when we look at things like HELOCs and home equity lines of credit, which are based off of prime rate, those may come down as we see the federal funds rate cut.
So as you just outlined, trying to do the balancing act, when might we reach that sweet spot of stimulating growth while containing inflation? And what would it look like for everyday Americans, especially workers and small business owners?
Yeah, I think this is a big part of the challenge right now, because a lot of people are concerned with the Fed cutting rates as inflation started to creep up a little bit. And they talked about that today, that inflation is still running higher than the levels that they want. Is that there's a lot of concern that this may stimulate demand, or if we have lower rates, may stimulate the economy a little bit to run hot. So what we believe is that we may see a deregulatory initiative, or we already are seeing it, right, through executive orders and legislation. If we ease regulation within the industry, we could actually spur supply, and this could offset some of this, let's call it higher demand that could be spurred from lower rates. So ultimately, that's what we're thinking could offset some of this and could mean that we hit this sweet spot of growth overall, and this could allow this economy to continue the run.
Quickly looking ahead, with two more rate cuts anticipated this year, what key economic indicators should Americans watch to gauge whether the Fed's approach is succeeding or if risks like higher inflation resurface?
Yeah, the two primary things you have to watch are employment, right? We got to think about the Fed mandates, employment and inflation. So we want to watch CPI, core CPI, PCE, and we also want to watch what happens with the employment numbers. One of my favorite data points to watch is not just jobs numbers, but actually what the four-week moving average of initial unemployment claims are. As long as that stays low, I think we have a healthy economy, because that means that people aren't being laid off. And as long as inflation stays around this 2.93% number and doesn't start to spike, I think that that could be a good sign that the Fed continues on the path that it's in and we have a sustainable economic environment.
Todd Stankiewicz, thanks so much for your insights.
Thank you very much.
The U.S. Congress is racing against the clock to keep the government open past the end of the month. Republicans and Democrats have released two starkly different plans, and the possibility of a government shutdown is growing by the hour. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us with the latest. Eric.
Good evening, Veronica. We've seen it so many times before. Lawmakers are up against the clock to keep the government running. House Speaker Mike Johnson and House GOP leaders have released a stopgap funding bill to keep federal agencies open until November 21st, just before Thanksgiving. However, Democrats are digging in their heels, saying that they won't support any bill that doesn't include their input.
They even refused to have bipartisan negotiations. We've always had bipartisan negotiations on this. Johnson put his bill in, no Democratic input, and that is why the Republicans are heading for us for a shutdown. We don't want it.
That's not entirely true. When Democrats were in charge, they refused any Republican input. Democrats are also demanding Obama tax credits be extended. They are due to expire at the end of the year.
We're ready to negotiate a bipartisan spending deal that protects Americans' health care. But we will not be complicit in passing any legislation that takes away health care from the American people.
Majority Leader John Thune says he would consider taking up the extension after a clean CR is passed. He and other Republicans say it's now up to Minority Leader Chuck Schumer to come to the table.
They're kind of having this meltdown over the fact that we're not talking to them. Well, we are talking to them through the right channels, and my office is right here. Chuck's is right here. It's very easy for him to come to here or to say, we need to have a conversation about this CR.
You know, Schumer's barreling for a Schumer shutdown here. A clean CR is what Republicans are talking about. Continues to give us time to pass more individual appropriations bills. And I think that's what you'll see. I think you've got a temper tantrum now from Democrats. And if they want to shut down the government, that's going to be on them.
Chuck Schumer is working overtime trying to get a government shutdown. He feels like that works in his favor. We know shutdowns are expensive.
The GOP-backed CR also includes some $58 million for additional security for the three branches of government. House Speaker Mike Johnson wants a vote as soon as possible, but Republicans can only lose two Republican votes. And right now, Representatives Thomas Massie and Victoria Spartz are against it unless additional cuts take place. But I'll stay on top of the issue. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
FBI Director Kash Patel faced tough questions on Capitol Hill today, defending his work leading the agency, addressing the assassination of Charlie Kirk and new scrutiny over the release of files related to Jeffrey Epstein.
The most important stat for Americans to realize, in just 7 months, we are on track to produce the lowest murder rate in modern U.S. history by double digits. Those are results not of mine. Those are results of the men and women of the FBI. If you want to criticize me, bring it on. But do not attack the brave leaders in the field.
Patel touts the FBI's swift arrest in Charlie Kirk's murder, crediting agency-released photos. He also defends the Bureau's handling of the so-called Epstein files, insisting court orders limit what can be shared. He says the FBI is releasing, quote, as much as legally allowed. Over to the Senate side, where the former CDC director testified in front of the Senate Health Committee. Dr. Susan Monares claims she was fired for refusing to endorse Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s vaccine guidance.
Secretary Kennedy demanded two things of me that were inconsistent with my oath of office and the ethics required of a public official. He directed me to commit in advance to approving every ACIP recommendation, regardless of the scientific evidence. He also directed me to dismiss career officials responsible for vaccine policy without cause.
Monares also accused Kennedy and his advisors of rebuffing data supporting vaccine safety and efficacy. Health and Human Services says in a statement, Monares was fired for declaring herself untrustworthy to Secretary Kennedy and acting maliciously to undermine the president's agenda. We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly. A U.S. bishop is speaking out on gender ideology, what he has to say, and where he says clarity can be found. And she's one of the few female doctors of the church. We introduce you to St. Hildegard von Bingen and show you what makes her so unique, even among saints. Turning now to a tragic situation in Niger. Local media report gunmen opened fire on villagers attending a baptism ceremony, killing 15 people. It happened in the Talaberry region near Burkina Faso and Mali. Groups such as Al-Qaeda and ISIS are known to operate there. Niger's government has struggled to contain terrorist organizations. Human Rights Watch estimates more than 127 villagers and Muslim worshippers have been killed in the attacks since March. A Catholic father is dead, gunned down while visiting a Marian shrine with his family. It happened in Mariamabad in the northeastern part of the country on September 12th. According to the Vatican News Agency, Fidesz Azal was shot at a gas station just miles away from the shrine. He was a married father of four, and a suspect has been arrested. The head of the Diocese of Toledo, Ohio, publishes a response to the gender ideology movement. Bishop Daniel Thomas says attempting to change gender is, quote, medically assisted self-harm. Bishop Thomas also says even though our gender cannot change, our hearts can. And people experiencing pain over gender identity should know God loves them and wants to bring them to himself through their troubles. In the nearly 8,000-word letter, Bishop Thomas writes, quote, when people hear teachings that conflict with their own understanding of who they are and what they need to be happy, it can seem to them that no explanation could possibly justify such teachings and that they must be rejected. The answer is surely not to water down Catholic teachings, which are meant to clarify and defend in the light of faith the truth about our engendered bodily life. He adds, to those who struggle with gender confusion, I want you to know that you are not alone. Christ loves you, the Church loves you, and I love you. For analysis of the letter, we bring in Mary Rice Hassan, director of the Person and Identity Project at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. Mary, great to be with you.
Thank you so much. Wonderful to be with you.
So first, just your overall thoughts on the response by Bishop Thomas to the transgender movement.
So I was delighted to see this for a number of reasons. One, it's timely. We've had a lot of letters, very good pastoral letters from bishops, archbishops, but this is the most recent one. And given the recent heartbreaks, the assassination attempt or completed assassination of Charlie Kirk, the controversies we're seeing around this issue, I think it's tremendously important that we have a bishop speaking out and giving such timely but really comprehensive, loving, and hopeful guidance.
Bishop Thomas writes, quote, because body and soul are not two natures, but form a single human nature, the body necessarily reveals the person as a boy or a girl, a man or a woman. Can you talk about the confusion that exists about the human person right now?
Yeah, and he really hones in so beautifully in this document on the truth that we are body and soul, and that our bodies reveal something wonderful about who we are. And so rejecting the body, which is really what's going on in the transgender issue, it's sex rejection, rejection of yourself, is really turning back on yourself and sort of hating and destroying something that is really, really good. So the bishop was really emphasizing the truth about the human body, but also he does a wonderful job, I think, of analyzing how evil masquerades as good. So we can see people who are troubled and they're looking for an answer, but the answer is not going to be in engaging in harmful, sex rejecting, really destructive interventions. And so he's very clear on that. At the same time, he's putting his hand out, and this letter is to all. It's not just to church personnel. And it invites people to read and to educate themselves and to be loving ambassadors of the truth. And I think that's something our young people really need to hear right now.
It was nearly 8,000 words, and it was the longest such response from a bishop so far. Do you think church leaders are doing enough on this issue?
So I think we're seeing really terrific responses in a lot of places. Some dioceses have gone, have had a really sustained effort to educate their own people, their teachers, their personnel, to have ministries that are reaching out to people. But unfortunately, I think there are some dioceses where there's nothing. There's not even a statement about how people should understand this issue, what the church is teaching is. So I encourage bishops, if they have not written and spoken to this issue, to please do that. People want to hear that. And that's what I hear from people when I travel all over the U.S. talking about this issue. And people are looking for leadership of the kind that we saw and with Bishop Thomas's letter. And so I'm so grateful for it. And I hope we'll see more of it.
Now, Bishop Thomas spends a good bit of time on the role social media plays in eroding values and positive identity among teens. Do you agree?
Absolutely. Social media, I think everyone is waking up to the fact that while there are good things about being able to connect, there are also, it really has become a channel of evil in many respects. And our youth are particularly vulnerable because they're young. They don't have the prudence, the discretion to be able to judge what's the truth of what's coming at them. They're very subject to manipulation and peer pressure. And so much is coming through social media. So parents have to be on top of that. But I think courageous enough sometimes to just say, no, and we're not going to go in that direction because it's just really deep and dark. In fact, one of the quotes in Bishop Thomas's letter is actually a quote from Archbishop Coakley, who wrote his own wonderful letter on this topic. And Archbishop Coakley says, you have to understand gender ideology is, quote, an evil infecting the world in this time. And we have to reject that, but he says we also have to unconditionally love those who are caught in its snares. So I think that's the way to think about it. We want to love those who are really struggling and maybe even entrapped in this way of thinking, but we have to speak the truth and we have to be really clear that this is evil. It's evil to reject your body. It's evil to reject the truth about yourself. And there are wonderful holistic ways to deal with difficult feelings. And God loves everyone so much, and he wants something better than what is on offer right now from the culture on this issue.
Mary Rice Hassan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, Grace Where You Might Not Expect It, where Pope Leo says we can find the love of God even when it feels absent. Plus, poet, doctor, mystic, just a few of the titles of one of today's saints will show you what sets St. Hildegard von Bingen apart from all the others. Pope Leo reminds the faithful that every suspended time can become a time of grace if we offer it to God.
Dio non ha paura del tempo che passa, perché è Signore anche dell'attesa.
At the weekly talk, the Holy Father focused on the mystery of Holy Saturday. He encouraged pilgrims to always trust in God's power to operate in their lives, even when the wait feels long and hope may seem lost. The Pope also invited Christians to discover that life does not always depend on what we do, but also on knowing how to take leave of what we have been able to do. During a major gathering of interfaith leaders in Kakistan, Pope Leo delivers a message of unity. He said, collaboration is not a call to erase differences, but rather an invitation to embrace diversity as a source of mutual enrichment. The Catholic Church acknowledges and esteems all that is true and holy in other religions. Indeed, she seeks to foster authentic synergy by bringing the distinct gifts of each tradition to the table of encounter, where each faith contributes its unique wisdom and compassion in service of the common good. Today, the Church celebrates the feast of St. Hildegard of Bingen, a German mystic, doctor of the Church, and a remarkable woman who fulfilled many roles in her lifetime. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Sedergren has more.
The Church calls mystics those men and women whose souls are in direct union with the divine through contemplation and love. Not only was St. Hildegard of Bingen a mystic, but also one of the most influential mystics in the history of the Church. Born in 1098 in Bermersheim, modern-day Germany, Hildegard was dedicated to religious life by her parents at the age of 8. She entered a Benedictine monastery and became an important abbess and scholar.
È una figura composita e quindi è abbadessa.
Hildegard is a multifaceted figure, an abbess, and thus a woman of power, as well as mystic, philosopher, pharmacist, and physician. Above all, she is a holy woman, and that is how we are primarily called to see her. I would say that in hindsight, what she developed in her visions represents the finest part of her legacy.
Hildegard's extraordinary visions started in her early childhood. They were highly complex, exploring the divine, the human soul, and the natural world, and showing how all of creation is interconnected. She later recorded them in adulthood, inspiring writings on theology, science, herbal medicine, and music that still resonate today. Around 1147, Pope Eugene III granted her permission to write and speak about her visions, an extraordinary privilege for a woman of that time.
These iconological works are capable of conveying meaning through colors and shapes, because we are embodied spirits. And often, we understand much more through images than through words.
Hildegard founded her own monasteries and was much sought after as a wise counselor. She advised kings, nobles, and popes on matters of church and state, but she gave spiritual and practical advice to common folk as well. Her intimate relationship with God guided everything she did and wrote.
Let's start with mystic, not in the sense of something incomprehensible, because mystic doesn't mean that. It means mysterious in Greek, and mystic means profound. So, it's about depth, a depth that is not reserved for a select few.
In 2012,
Pope Benedict XVI canonized her and named her a Doctor of the Church, which only four women have been named in the history of the Church.
The great prophetess speaks to us with great relevance even today. Through her courageous ability to discern the signs of the times, her love for creation, her medicine, her poetry, and her music, which is now being revived.
To this day, devotion to Saint Hildegard continues, with many honoring her not only as a saint, but also as a composer, healer, and theologian whose teachings continue to inspire faith. In Rome, Benedictia de Grian for EWTN News Nightly.
St. Hildegard von Bingen isn't the only saint and doctor of the Church celebrated today. It's also the feast day of St. Robert Bellarmine. He was born in Italy in 1542 and ordained a Jesuit priest in 1570 in the midst of the Protestant Reformation. He devoted himself to the study of Church history and the Church Fathers, becoming the theologian to Pope Clement VIII and writing two catechisms to reaffirm the authentic teachings of the Church. He was elevated to the College of Cardinals before his death in 1621 and was canonized by Pope Pius XI in 1930. The following year, he was named a Doctor of the Church. Saint Robert Bellarmine and Saint Hildegard, pray for us. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Veronica Dudo. Good night and God bless.